following program is brought to you in living color on NBC.
Hey, where y'all at?
It is a thrill. I love this show.
You're telling me a big fat lie.
I was hoping for funny, crazy.
I will get on stage on Broadway and I will reenact the rantings of Charlie Sheen one day.
Think you can replace me with some other guy? Go ahead. It won't be the same.
'Tis mightiest in the mightiest.
Do not bring Shakespeare into this.
You're so smart.
Oh, really? Well, so are you.
And yes, the rumors are true. They smoke, they drink, they use bad language in mixed company. They're extremely rich and they can flash more bling than most posses in this room.
I know exactly who that is. That's the mother that loses every game. That's Kirk Cousins. Get rid of him.
Wow.
Bros, come on. I love you, bros.
Does everybody have to be crazy today?
Now get me Sabian!
Alpha Carlson. Take away the basketball bench, get him working on the near wall up here. Converged down by Camp. And this allows Benoit to get over, but he whipped on the clearing attempt. Caps keep it in. Carlson in the middle of the ice. Ovechkin scores! A power play goal for Alex Ovechkin. 844. Sandin shot wide. McMichael scores! Connor McMichael banks it off of wall from below the goal line. Just 34 seconds later, the Capitals get back within one.
Bounce. Hughes, Bertuzzi scores! Tyler Bertuzzi from Matthews and Domi, and it's 6-3.
Not the best way for the Capitals to start off a crucial three-game stretch at home with that 7-3 loss on Wednesday night to the Toronto Maple Leafs in a week that is going to go a long way in determining whether the Caps make the playoffs this year or not. Welcome to the show, everybody. I am Bob Matthews. Delighted to have you with us. We're going to chop all of this up with the Rooster, Chris Russell, from the Team 980 in just a few minutes. We're also going to talk a little Commanders. It is the silly season now, especially with the quarterback situation. Commanders brass out in L.A. earlier this week looking at Caleb Williams and then on to Ann Arbor for J.J. McCarthy's pro day. So we will talk with Rooster about both of those. First, though, got to talk about Wednesday night. And by the way, when we talk to Russell, just in the interest of transparency, we recorded the interview with him just before face-off on Wednesday. So think of it more from a 45,000-foot look at where the Caps are right now, and not so much about Wednesday night. It was not the way they wanted to start, certainly. Auston Matthews getting goal number 56 on the year for him just 16 seconds into the game, and then he got his second of the game and 57th of the year a little bit later. But one of the things that you're going to hear Rooster and I talk about is this stretch of games coming up here for the Capitals. As well as they have been playing, the teams they are playing right now are just simply better than them. Wish that wasn't the case, but that's just the way it is. So it's really important, obviously, that they get points right now. And it's not that they aren't capable of getting points against these teams that they've got coming in. Again, it was the Maple Leafs, which they dropped the game to on Wednesday. You've got a very motivated one would think Evgeny Kuznetsov and the Hurricanes coming in on Friday. Then Sunday, it's Winnipeg, also a playoff team in the Western Conference, and one of the teams that they are chasing, the Detroit Red Wings, next Tuesday. In most of those games, the Capitals are going to be the underdogs. So, while, again, they are capable of getting points, you want to see how these games play out. If they don't, if they lose some of these games, how is it going to look? And it's very interesting because despite the final score Wednesday night of 7-3, which, by the way, was literally a week since they had given up 7 goals to Edmonton, the 7-3 loss against Toronto, I think, looked a lot better than the 7-2 loss against the Oilers. And the reason for that, I think there's a few. One of them is the fact that Alex Ovechkin had 2 of the Caps' 3 goals, and that's important. Ovi is finally starting to heat up. We knew it was going to happen eventually, but it's good to see Ovechkin finally starting to look like Ovechkin once again. One of the goals on a power play from the office. Again, that's what you want to see. And also the emergence of the youngsters. We've been talking about this all year, and I've been harping on it for about 8 months now. If last year's team in Hershey was so good, and it was, it won the Calder Cup, why aren't more of the youngsters being promoted to play for the Caps? Well, what have we been seeing the last few games? And coincidentally, games that, you know, the Caps have played pretty well in. I mean, you know, this one snapped a three-game winning streak for them. But we are seeing a lot of the members of last year's Calder Cup championship team getting significant minutes and performing well with Washington this year. Connor McMichael had a just nasty, filthy goal last night, banking it off of the goaltender's pads. You heard it in the open there. He has become a bona fide second-line NHL center. Hendrix LaPierre is getting minutes and locking down the center position on the third line. Ivan Marushnichenko is playing very, very well and is on the first line with Ovechkin and playing well. So the more and more you see these guys, and I'm not even including, you know, Rasmus Sandin or Beck Malmsten, or, you know, Michael Scarbosa, who's a little bit older than those guys, and on and on and on. One of the things we talked about a couple of years ago was the fact that the Capitals had this aging core that was, you know, realizing diminishing returns, and they didn't have anything in the pipeline to replace them. And I kind of thought it was a misnomer then. It's surely a misnomer now, and I got to think that the future's a lot brighter. You know, not only do you see, and talking strictly about Hershey here, but you see Marushnichenko, McMichael, and Hendrix LaPierre up here making, you know, contributions now. But look down at in Hershey right now. You've still got Ethan Frank. You have a number of other kids that are down there. And then even further down the line, Ryan Leonard has been tearing it up for Boston College. And, you know, the newest phenom, Zach Funk, who has scored, what, 50 goals in 50 games, 60 goals in 60 games in the juniors. I mean, you know, he's just, and was in the WHL and was, you know, an undrafted free agent when they signed him to this entry-level contract just a couple of weeks ago. So I think things are looking okay for the Caps. It's going to be interesting to see what these next few years bring. And again, if they keep on this rate that they're playing now, think about it. This is supposed to be the rebuilding stage. If the rebuilding era for this team includes maybe either a trip to the playoffs this year as either the eighth seed or maybe as high as the sixth seed if they catch Philadelphia, or just missing the playoffs, it's not a bad way to go about rebuilding your team. All right, let's take a break. We're going to talk about all of this and more with Chris Russell from the Team 980 in just a second. It's the Bob Matthews Podcast right here on the Hockey Podcast Network. We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on ice. And this week, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. It's so easy. I'm going to tell you how to do it in a second. But the thing I love about DraftKings is, I mean, it's like being over there at Rivers in the sportsbook. Everything you want right at your fingertips. For instance, I'm on here now, you know, Blackhawks Capitals tomorrow night at Capital One Arena. Anything you want. The over-under is 6. Washington is -225 right now. Hey, you want to bet on that? You want to bet on the money line? Whatever you want. You want to take the Blackhawks? You think they're going to win? You can get action on them as well. It is so easy. All you got to do is download the DraftKings Sportsbook app with the promo code THPN. New customers bet $5 on the NHL. You get $200 instantly in bonus bets. That's only on DraftKings Sportsbook with the code THPN. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2024. All rights reserved.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Yeah, here come the Rooster. Yeah.
You know the walk-up music. Time to bring him in. He's the host of the Chris Russell Show on the Team 980 in Washington, D.C. The Rooster is joining us. How you doing, my friend? Come on in, Mikey.
What's up, Bob? How are you, pal?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Just living the dream here at the beach. So we're just what we can, you know?
There could be worse places to be, right? Except, you know, I guess if it's cold. It's cold anywhere, and maybe it's colder there. I don't know.
As long as the wind's not coming off the water, you're okay. When it is, you're screwed.
I don't know if this helps, but we had pretty strong gusty winds for about a day and a half here in the nation's capital and the greater DMV area earlier this week, and I was out on Monday night, and it was about as cold as I've been in, I don't know, maybe since some of the AFC playoff games that I used to go to in Buffalo as a college kid, when I had other, I had other things that I was ingesting into my body
help
keep me warm. But some of those January Sundays and Saturdays, for that matter, in Buffalo, New York, quite a number of years ago, that reminded me of Monday night around here.
I heard you were hobnobbing with some bigwigs there on Monday night with Chef Andreas and all those guys.
That was Monday afternoon.
Monday afternoon.
Your boy's been busy. So what they're doing at Capital One Arena for anybody coming to a Capitals or Wizards game, before they leave for Maryland, apparently. I don't know.
Something like that. Today they're leaving for Maryland.
Exactly. What they have is a new, for those that are familiar with the area, the 7th Street side where there used to be a McDonald's, they knocked that out and they rebuilt the space. And Chef Jose Andreas, you know, world celebrity chef, has a new spot in there. And so it's this slick new restaurant concept. Apparently, it's going to be open for the rest of this hockey season to only a certain high-end clientele, meaning, you know, like if you buy like center ice tickets or on the glass or whatever. I believe the plan is to open it up to the general public, I believe, next year, but I'm not 100% sure on that. But it's a pretty slick space, and how they do this, it's interesting, kind of like behind the scenes, because a friend of mine who runs Guy Fieri's restaurant, also in Capital One Arena, another celebrity chef, but just a different concept. He was telling me, you know, that they actually, in order to prepare the food up to the standards of the celebrity chef that's name is on the restaurant, in this particular case with Chef Jose Andreas, they have to prepare it like mostly off site, Bob, and then bring it to the arena and then touch it up in a kitchen, but a smaller kitchen. They don't have the space to do this huge breakout kitchen like they do over at Guy Fieri's, which is again also in the arena, but a much, much bigger space. So it's interesting to see how Monumental is trying to handle both the current situation at Capital One Arena, the potential new spot wherever they wind up building and going. And of course, that could have something to do with the Commanders. We'll have to see. And just everything that kind of goes behind the scenes in the sports world. It really is about money, hospitality, VIP, and making sure that the people that have the money are comfortable and have plenty of nice places to spend that money.
Yeah, well, I got to tell you, we were there for the ACC Finals on Saturday, and everything was chip shape for us. I thought it was terrific.
Yeah, and I didn't realize you were up here, so I'm sorry I missed you.
Were you there?
No, I wasn't at the game, but I mean in the area. The arena, you know, Capital One Arena, for those that have not been there recently or those that have not been there at all. I mean, it still is, you know, in pretty darn good shape, I think. I mean, just from what I can tell and what I can see. Now, listen, if you're a guy like me of larger carriage, are you going to be a little uncomfortable in some of the seats? Sure. In terms of leg room, in terms of maybe width, what have you, obviously the arena was built 27 years ago or whatever it is, you know, so they are building arenas differently now is what I would say. And that's part of why you would want a new arena. But overall, it's still a great experience. It's the perfect location. There's plenty of restaurants, not only in the surrounding area in Chinatown, but also, and I just point this out again, mentioned Guy Fieri's place. Once Jose Andreas's place, you know, fully goes open, obviously there's plenty of places to eat inside, the main concourses of the arena where you don't have to go for a fancy, you know, sit down type thing. So it's still a great area to go. I wish and I hope they can find a way to make both sides happy, Washington, D.C., that area, and Monumental Sports and Entertainment, and keep the Caps and the Wizards there and figure out some way to make it work, because it really is a great experience. It's so fun. It's so easy to get to, all things considered.
Oh, absolutely. Took the Metro right in. We had a great time with it. And, of course, I didn't see a railing fall down and give way, so I figured...
Wait, where does that happen?
Oh, no. I'm saying, from FedEx. I'm like, I think it isn't a great.
I was being sarcastic. I mean, and obviously that was under previous ownership. So to my knowledge, we didn't have many disasters except for the hot water not working after one of the brutal losses in the visitors' locker room. I forget which game that was. Maybe that was the Giants game right around Thanksgiving.
I think it was, yeah.
I can't remember, but that was probably about as bad as publicly it got for Josh Harris and the new ownership group with the Commanders over at FedEx Field, with the exception of that very, very robust 4-13 record.
Exactly. Hey, so we'll get to the Commanders in a second. Want to start with the Caps, though. Big game tonight at Cap One Arena. Maybe you hear this beforehand, maybe you don't, but it doesn't change, no matter what happens tonight, at least for the time being, it doesn't really change the recent arc of this team. Trade deadline came and went. They sold off some parts. They got some draft picks and stuff for it, and lo and behold, they put in some of the kids, giving them more ice time, and all of a sudden the Caps are playing well, I think, and might actually sneak into the playoffs.
Well, so, it's interesting. I mean, obviously, tough stretch here with two high-powered teams in Toronto and Carolina that can really skate, transition. Evgeny Kuznetsov comes back to D.C. for the first time on Friday night, so on and so forth. So this is going to be a really interesting challenge for what I would say is kind of the new look capsule. You mentioned a couple of the things that they did by trading Anthony Mantha, who was at that point their second leading goal scorer, Evgeny Kuznetsov, who wanted out and who had been missing for a while within the substance abuse program, and Joel Edmondson. And you thought, okay, this team is kind of packing it in. Maybe they'll, show some signs of life, give you something to look forward to next year, but who are we kidding? They're probably not going to the playoffs, especially with, at that point, if you looked at it, they had Connor Bedard in Chicago coming in to Capital One Arena, and then they were starting a 5-game road trip a couple of nights after that, all out west. And it started about as badly as you can, blowout losses at Winnipeg, at Edmonton, to start the trip, Bob. And then all of a sudden they said, you know what, look, we can't run and do everything we want to do at this point with these high octane attacks. We have to choke them out a little bit. We have to play more responsible. We have to help more. We have to play a little more heavy. We have to play a more defensive oriented style. That's the only chance we've got to make this work. And along with the youth that you've mentioned, when you look at former number one overall pick not too long ago, a year and a half ago, Ivan Marichnichenko, along with Alexei Protas, along with Connor McMichael, another former number one overall pick, along with Hendrix LaPierre, who scored a big goal the other night in Calgary to make it a 4-1 game, and Rasmus Sundin, who they just re-signed to a big contract extension, and Charlie Lindgren's been awesome in net over the last, you know, 10 games. I mean, he's really been good for them both years that he's been here, but now he's taken over the number one goaltending spot, and it's kind of all come together. Now, again, I will point out, I want to see how these next two games against two high-octane attacks, really high-octane attacks, you know, go before I crown them ready to win a playoff series or even ready to make the playoffs. But certainly the signs have been encouraging over the last week or so that the Capitals are back to, you know, I guess kind of being what they were when they put together the Stanley Cup run, which was a mix of, you know, of course, offensive talent and skill when you have Alex Ovechkin. And back then you had Nicholas Backstrom and you had, you know, other guys that, you know, were key cogs, but they could play defense and they could suffocate you under Barry Trotz. And they really kind of got away from that gradually along with inconsistent goaltending. And now, at least for the last couple of games, it's back.
And just to hear you say, you know, drawing at least some kind of parallel to say 2018, that's big when you get that, you know, from the Rooster, because, you know, you're the guy and you tell it straight, you know, you are not here to wave the pom-poms unless it's completely and utterly necessary and warranted. So, you know, to hear that, people ought to be encouraged about that. So
I appreciate that. I mean, now listen, I want to be careful again. I think this is a huge, huge stretch, right? So maybe we'll think completely differently, you know, this weekend. So let's see how they come through all of this. But Bob, you know what I'm trying to say. Like, it takes a certain style to win in every sport, right? If you don't get great pitching in October, you're not winning a World Series. If you don't get great defensive hockey and more specifically goaltending in the Stanley Cup playoffs, you're not winning four rounds and 16 games. In the NBA, if you don't hit your free throws and if you don't get in the paint, you're not going to win four rounds. In football, obviously, they say offense sells tickets and defense wins championships. And I know a lot of people have tried to poo-poo that theory, but I still believe, like, look at the Kansas City Chiefs. Sure, they have Patrick Mahomes, but they ain't winning anything without their defense this year. And I can go year in, year out, you know, and say essentially the same thing. Now, every dynamic and every situation is different, but the bottom line is it still works, I believe, in hockey and in other sports, that if you don't have that good goaltending and if you don't have the, you know, the ability to commit defensively, you really don't have a shot.
No, I completely agree. And so I want to approach this coming stretch here like this. As you said, Toronto tonight, Carolina on Friday. So obviously Caps are underdogs in both of those games. Let's say the chalk holds, they don't get a point out of either one of these games. What should we look for to be encouraged out of what could possibly be losses, in your opinion?
Well, I it's a good question. So I guess here's how I would answer it. Like, if they don't get a point in both of those games, I would say, please tell me you lost 2-1 or 3-2 and not got run off the ice, meaning 6-1, 6-2, 6-3 type scores by, again, two high-powered, high-octane, fast transition attacks. So if that's what happens, and then say you get a win Sunday afternoon against the Winnipeg Jets, a easier team to beat than the other two, when they celebrate TJ Oshie's 1,000th career game, if you and by the way, they got thoroughly handled by Winnipeg just a week and a half ago in Winnipeg. But, you know, again, different situation. If you come out of these three games, say, you know, with 2 points in that game and no points in the Maple Leafs and Hurricanes game, but you lose 2-1 or 3-2 and it's hard fought and it's right down to the wire. And you were trying to bury, you know, the biscuit, you know, in the last minute and you just lay it out on the line. Listen, of course, you're going to say, man, if we would have done this or whatever different, we would have gotten a point, 2 points, whatever the case might be. But I just don't want you to be embarrassed. I don't want you to be run. And especially coming back from this 5-game trip, they didn't even have really a day off. If you think about it, they played Monday night in Calgary. And then for whatever reason, the team did not fly back late Monday night. They chose to fly back all day Tuesday. Now, listen, they fly in luxury. I'm not trying to say that they didn't have an opportunity to rest, but you got to spend 4 or 5 hours in a plane. That's different than having a day off at home where you're able to sleep in your own bed and eat whatever you want and you know, maybe watch Netflix, you know, right, from the comfort of your own home. So, again, I would say just before we go too crazy here, let's see how this stretch goes. But to your point, if they don't get a point over the next couple of games, you know, as long as they do it respectfully and respectably, then I think I'll be okay with that. And it'll be understanding that, again, they're a playoff fringe team and nothing more. And that's fine. That's pretty much what they are and what they should be.
Exactly. I think we're simpatico on that. Let's switch to the Commanders real quick. Sure. Free agency, it's, you know, for all intents and purposes, all the big stuff has happened. I was fascinated by the fact that Adam Peters turned over a ton of this roster in free agency. And, you know, obviously these aren't big splash signings like, you know, in years past, but this roster is, I mean, it's going to look completely different come week one here in September. I mean, he's already stripped it down to the studs, right?
Pretty much. I mean, you know, if you look at the guys that are coming back from last year's team, right? F.A. Obada, Cornelius Lucas, Jeremy Reeves. Am I forgetting anybody, Bob?
There ain't many left. Alan Payne, I mean, and after that, the list gets short.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, no, I meant in terms of
Re-signing. Yeah,
in terms of like free agents. Yeah, I mean, obviously, Daron Payne, Jonathan Allen, and Terry McLaurin,
Crowder,
and a couple of others.
Re-sign Crowder?
Right. Yeah. Who's that?
Crowder. Didn't they re-sign Jamison Crowder?
Yes. Good call. Yes. Good call. Jamison Crowder. You're right. Good call on that. But, you know, the guys that were free agents, right? What is that? 4 free agents that they re-sign. Now, I mean, listen, you can always make an argument that those other guys, specifically Cameron Curl, wanted too much money. And that's why they weren't re-signed. Not because they were bad players, but because they wanted too much money. And it doesn't so much matter that Cam Curl got what appears to be a very light deal in Los Angeles. And, why didn't the Commanders match that? Well, there was friction there between both sides, right? So,
right.
So that's really the problem in that particular case. I don't know if there was friction necessarily between the Commanders and Kendall Fuller. I just think Dan Quinn wants to play more man and more aggressive defense, and that's not Kendall Fuller's game. I know he can play it at times, but that's not Kendall Fuller's strength at this point in his career as he makes the turn from 30. So, I mean, you look at every situation and you say, okay, it's not just because the roster was terrible. It's not just because, those guys can't play or aren't scheme fits. I mean, there's various different circumstances surrounding each one of them. I will tell you, I'm a little surprised, as we record this, that a guy like James Smith Williams wasn't part of the mix and brought back, because I thought even though they went out and got Cleland Farrell, even though they went out and got Dorrance Armstrong, even though they went out and got Dante Fowler and really bolstered that, and they brought back F.A. Obada off that injury, I still thought a guy like James Smith Williams, and maybe it'll change, would come back just because he's kind of like one of those guys that interchangeable piece, can play outside, inside, you know, hard worker, hustler, did everything you would possibly ask for a 7th round pick. Not as good as Cameron Curl, different position, different situation, right. But they were both seventh round picks of Ron Rivera and Kyle Smith back in 2020.
Exactly. Bobby Wagner was, you know, the name guy out there. And, you know, you and I both, we see it on Twitter. We see it all over social media, people getting excited about it. I'm trying to figure out where Wagner's going to fall between my comps for him are London Fletcher on the good side, Thomas Davis on the bad side, and which one of those guys we think he's going to be more like once he gets on the field. What do you think?
Oh, that's a fascinating question. We're talking about London. Are we talking
London
about
London with
2012,
the Redskins?
2013?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Because London really was a liability in coverage, you know, because he was squatty. He was, what, 5'10"?
Right. Something like that, yeah.
5'11", you know, and obviously didn't have the same athleticism, you know, in 2012 and 2013. Although 2012, he had a hell of a second half of the season and made that run, but he was better diagnosing plays, attacking the line of scrimmage, stopping the run, and that's where I think Bobby Wagner's strength at this point is. Attacking the line of scrimmage, blowing up the run, snuffing things out, containing, not letting the edge just get constantly pillaged and abused, that type of thing. If you get anything out of him in coverage against, I don't know, a 6'3", 6'4", tight end, you know, who runs like a deer down the seam and he can knock one away, you know, I mean, listen, that's going to be great. But I would assume, this is me, I don't know, I would assume that's why you sign a guy like Frankie Louvu, to try and draw that assignment as much as humanly possible, as much as you can create that. And even a Jamin Davis, and even though that's not necessarily his strength, it is for Louvu. Louvu is really good in coverage. I think he's good at attacking the line of scrimmage and blowing up runs and diagnosing the runs. And I think he's a good pass rusher. So I think the combination of Louvu and Wagner is probably going to, well, it certainly obviously made the linebacker room and the linebacker position way, 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 way better than it was. But I think they'll be able to mask whatever deficiencies maybe Bobby Wagner has in coverage at this point by Louvu and hopefully, an improved Jamin Davis.
Yeah. Although, you know, man, I'm really going to miss the Buffalo nickel. Just, you know.
Well, Bob, it's an interesting point that you just brought up, right? So here's my question to you.
All right.
If you got Jeremy Chinn, who a lot of people kind of think is similar to at least Cam Curl, right?
Mm-hmm.
If he can stay on the field, you have Derek Forrest, you have Percy Butler. Those are your top three guys. Then you have, who else am I forgetting? I mean, Jeremy Reeves is really kind of like
special,
you know,
teams,
special
but
teams, but he can contribute. You know, am I forgetting about anybody?
Probably. I can't either at this point. Who knows what it's going to look like? You know.
Yeah, but I mean, here's the overall point. Mm-hmm. As I struggle to remember who I was trying to bring up, and maybe they'll draft somebody, obviously, as well too.
Right.
But here's the overall point. You can still play, I think, you can still play three safeties on the field. I do. I mean, I'm not ready to rule that out yet because, you know, I think one of the things about Dan Quinn, I was talking to a coach that I know well on the Cowboys staff, you know, and he said, really, you know, the thing about Dan Quinn is, you know, everybody's heard of, you know, how great of a dude he is and how much people want to play for him. And all of that is true. But one of the things about Dan Quinn is the interchangeability. And here's a perfect example. Like, I do think, again, they can play from time to time three safeties. Maybe you won't play it as much as the previous system, but I think you can do that depending on matchups, depending on certain teams' personnel. I think you can get away with that. And again, I mentioned a guy like Louvu, right, who's a linebacker, but he's going to play in some ways like a safety too. The other one that I was mentioning that
Quan
I was
Martin.
Thinking about was Quan Martin, who played about 50-50 in terms of slot and safety. So we have to kind of see where they're going to go with that. I would presume he's going to play more slot than safety, but he certainly can play, you know, some of that post safety stuff and whatever. So anyway, the point being is I think you can still play some of that. I do not think it'll be a main principle or anything like that, but it'll really depend on the matchups. And here's where I was going with this, right? So it's been widely presumed that, or at least from everyone that I've talked to, that they're going to be more of a 4-3 base. Yet the other day, there was a report that came out and said, you know, suggested maybe they will play more 3-4 here in Washington because that's what Quinn did a lot of in Dallas. So I talked to said coach and I said, hey, what am I missing here? I said, because it looked like you guys were multiple, you know, at times, and it looked like you guys were interchangeable, but primarily, or as a, I guess, hang your hat on base, you were a 4-3. And that's exactly what he confirmed, you know, for me the last couple of years in Dallas, meaning they were primarily a 4-3, but as he explained, he goes, really, it's kind of a 5-2 or a 5-1-5, where it's all interchangeable. And we see that with how they used Micah Parsons, but not only Micah Parsons, how they use Darrance Armstrong, who comes across to Washington, can play the edge, can play outside, can go inside and kick down on pass rushing situations. So again, I don't think anybody should lock themselves into, oh, they're not going to do this, or they are going to do this. I think they're going to be very interchangeable, very versatile, very multiple. And I know people get a little weirdly hostile about position flex.
I was going to bring that up.
You know, that's what every coach does. That's what every coaching staff does. Now, the key is to make sure that you're good at what you're good at.
All right. So now, obviously, silly season going on, you know, everything from they're going to trade up for Caleb. They're going to, you know, it's Drake May. It's Jaden Daniels. It's trading back and taking J.J. McCarthy. Where are you at? I keep going back and forth. This week, I think it's Jaden Daniels. Next week, I'll probably think it's Drake May again, even though the bottom line is none of us know what the hell is going on at this point.
Right. And that's probably a good thing. All the conjecture, all the, you know, speculation. I would be very concerned about this front office and this new regime if they were telegraphing anything really at this point. So here's where I am. There's a couple of things that I'm dead set against, and there's a couple of things that I'm variable on and open to. I am open to trading down from number two. Now I say that, but I would like ideally to stay in that top three or four range, which is harder to do because it limits the field. But if you could somehow sucker the New England Patriots into moving up to number two, if you have reasonable grades on Drake May and Jaden Daniels or reasonably close trades, I'd like to ideally do that, right? So you can get a little something more and have more, you know, again, versatility, more draft picks, more ability to move around the board in later rounds, not only just the first round. So let's start with that. I am dead set against moving up to number one for Caleb Williams, presumably, and complete control of the draft. I do not think it's worth it. I think it works maybe 5-10% of the time. People have cited, well, the Kansas City Chiefs did it with Patrick Mahomes. That wasn't moving up to number one.
That was moving up to 11.
And number two, that's Andy Reid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all knew Patrick Mahomes was really talented at Texas Tech. It was just a matter of whether they could bring it out of him and coach it out of him and develop. But it takes a special, special human being to do what Patrick Mahomes has done just in the last 2 years, never mind so far in his career. Think about it. Without Tyreek Hill, he's won 2 Super Bowls. Think about that, right? And think about how poised and mature and hardworking and just everything he is. It does not work that way. Just because it worked brilliantly for Patrick Mahomes, it doesn't work that way for most teams. And as a matter of fact, most of the time, it's a flop. And we all know what happened here in 2012 when they shouldn't have made the Robert Griffin III trade. And Bob, I can say this, like people say, oh, you know, hindsight. No, I was the one screaming in their building.
Yeah.
In their building that they shouldn't make that trade. And they were not happy because it was a huge marketing boom for them and it made them millions and millions of dollars, but it was not the right fit. And the head coach at the time, the offensive coordinator at the time, Mike and Kyle Shanahan knew it as well, you know, and not to be too revisionist, but the bottom line is it's really hard to get that decision right, meaning moving from 2-1, or in that case, 6-2. It's what it costs you is one thing. And then on top of that, here's the bigger thing. A, are you getting are you picking the right guy? That's obvious for every draft pick. But Bob, can you keep him on the field?
Yeah.
You know, and this is my problem with Jaden Daniels, I think, with certainly going up for Caleb Williams. And that is, number one, I have to hope that I've got the right guy and that guy can develop and get better at his craft and so on and so forth and be that franchise stabilizing guy. That's number one. But number two, can he stay on the field and can he stay healthy? And here's why that's such a big thing. You know, you look at Joe Burrow, right, in Cincinnati. Now, Cincinnati didn't have to move up. They didn't have to do anything. They made the right move. Number one, he went home this, and he's been great. But he hadn't been able to stay on the field in two of his 4 years. So even when you get it right, talent-wise and prospect-wise, you could still be in a really, really tough situation if the kid can't stay healthy, if the guy can't stay healthy. And that is right now a problem for Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals. Two of the 4 years he's been hurt, you know, and that's not a criticism. That's just the reality. So when I look at, okay, going up for one to Caleb Williams, not that he's got an injury history, but, you know, there's nothing to say that he can't sprain an ankle a couple of times and be out for 4 to 6 weeks in a couple of years. Well, I mean, if that's the case, most teams not fold like a cheap suit, but they struggle without their number one guy, especially if their number one guy is such a difference and dynamic, you know, difference maker, right? Some teams can overcome it, but not every team. So I guess, long story short, basically what I kind of look at is what is the most conservative but common sense play. And it's not for me trading up, and trading down comes with a certain risk. Again, you got to get the prospect right. You got to hope that the prospect is there, so on and so forth. But number two, staying at number two. Hey, baby, you earned it by sucking. That's yeah. You know, that's your consolation prize. Quite honestly, you earned it. Stay at number two is where I would lean, and I would lean towards taking Drake May, unless Caleb Williams somehow makes it past Chicago, which I don't think anybody believes.
Right.
But I would take Drake May, and here's a quick answer why. Drake May has all the positive attributes that you're looking at in terms of size, mobility, arm strength, I think character, toughness, all of that. I think he's more athletic than people think. I think he's better at running and escaping the pocket and running downhill and making big plays with his legs. He is more vertically play extension or downhill play extension than Caleb Williams is, who is more horizontally play extension. I'd rather have vertical. And I will tell you this. I think Drake May needs some time and needs some seasoning. I would take him with the idea of, hey, unless this kid blows us away, Marcus Mariota, who we signed, who I'm not a big fan of, is there. They'll have a competition. However we do the competition, maybe Drake May will surprise us and shock us all, but maybe he needs a little bit of time and maybe he needs a little bit of seasoning. And in the back of their mind, not that they would do this publicly, they say, okay, it's Mariota to start. I presume Jake Fromm would be either the backup or maybe it would be Drake May, who's then one snap away, and Drake May doesn't play until we think he's ready to go. And that might take a little bit more time than ideally you would want out of your number two overall pick. But again, remember, this franchise, this regime, and this pick, Bob, is not about winning games in the first half of the season. It's about doing the process right. So I can live with a guy who might not be ready to play week one, even though that's not ideal.
All right. I'm back on the Drake May train again. All right, Rooster. Thanks as always.
Listen, I can understand Jaden Daniels is a wonderfully talented prospect. I don't know about you. I just worry about him in a car crash.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I've seen that before. And I think his frame is very slight and very slender. And I think sometimes he tries to, you know, run between the hashes too much. And even though he can outrun people, guess what? There are safeties and linebackers that can run 4-4 in this league. It doesn't take them that long to close the window along the sideline where there's less room to operate. And for him to take a hard hit or a cheap shot or for him to do something going out of bounds, trying to elude a hit or sliding or whatever, there's just a lot there when you're that slender in your frame.
I agree. He's the best, folks. Chris Russell, Rooster, thanks so much for being with us. We will talk again soon, my friend.
You got it, Bob. Thanks as always for having me.
That's going to do it for us. Mick, the clock on the wall say we got to get out of here. Let's hope Caps can get them some points this weekend. They need them as the playoff push continues. We'll talk about it all next week. Remember, like the wise man once said, if you're on your bike tonight, as always, we're white.
Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. I've been around for a long, long year. Stole many a man's soul of faith. I was around when Jesus Christ had his moment of doubt and pain. Made damn sure the pilot washed his hands. Seal his face. Pleased to meet you. Hope you guessed my name. But what's puzzling you is the nature of my game. Stuck around St. Petersburg when I saw it was a time for a change. Killed the Tsar and his ministers, Anastasia screamed in vain. I rode a tank, held a generous rank, when the blitz free reigned.